This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Do you have a point of sale system you can trust, or is it a real POS? You need Shopify for retail. From accepting payments to managing inventory, Shopify POS has everything you need to sell in person. Go to shopify.com/system, all lowercase, to take your retail business to the next level today. That's shopify.com/system.
This is the Fox News Rundown Extra. I'm Chris Foster. Jimmy Fallon's got another gig. There's stand-up comedy, his weekday radio show, Fox Across America, a new book coming out, now his own TV show, Fox News Saturday Night with Jimmy Fallon. Came on our show to talk about all those jobs and answer my some more serious than others questions. Jimmy talks for a living, and it's a good time, so you may not be surprised to hear our conversation went on too long to fit into the regular weekday podcast and radio show. So today we play the whole thing. Thanks for listening. Please check us out whenever you can. Now Jimmy Fallon on the Fox News Rundown Extra.
Let's start with the Saturday show. Mm-hmm. What's it about? Why do people watch? Why is it any good?
Wow. Fox News Saturday Night with Jimmy Fallon is a cable news keg party. That's the hook. That's okay. That's what we're calling it. Reason being, okay, as a comic, for real, this is like the one serious point I'm going to make while we're here.
Okay.
Is I feel like comedy, specifically late night comedy, is actually hurting the country in a weird way right now because it's become very partisan. And I considered late night comedy growing up to be like the number one source of common culture, meaning you could turn it on at the end of the day to kind of escape the news.
Everybody watched Carson. He would make jokes about the news.
But he kind of took both sides. It wasn't so much that you didn't know where he stood. It's that you didn't care. Okay. It was like a permission slip to go wherever you wanted to for an hour. And everyone went there. Like at the peak, they had 48 million viewers, which is a testament to people who disagreed politically tuning in. You couldn't do that with one party. So what we're trying to do is we're trying to give back to the culture an autonomous zone. Does that make sense?
Sure.
So just for an hour. Like the show will end and the Sunday shows will start a few hours later and everybody can hate each other again. But I just want to be the timeout step. That's it.
Let's go back 47 years.
Yeah.
Childhood, how'd you get into stand-up? How'd you start driving a cab?
It's so perfectly that you know to go childhood stand-up because you realize you don't wind up performing if something traumatic didn't happen. No, I'm kidding. Right. I actually, to be honest with you, it's a sad story because whatever conversational and comedic acumen I possess, mm-hmm. I've had since I was five. So this isn't actually like the ascendant rise. This is the downhill spiral of a child prodigy.
Got it.
And I've just happened to latch onto a branch on the side of the cliff. But I always wanted to perform and do stand-up. My fifth grade teacher, we're going to talk about this on the show Saturday night. I had a fifth grade teacher who told me to watch Carson, Mrs. Mm-hmm. Pascana. Mm-hmm. And listen, it's Levittown. She might have been day drunk. But she was like, no, you should watch it. You should do it. She knew I wasn't going to do my homework. She's like, you might as well give him something to do. And she had told me to watch it. And from that day forward, I just always wanted to do it. And the way I actually got into comedy from my childhood, I guess, ambition to actually doing it, this is interesting.
How old when you first got on stage?
27. Okay,
oh, that's
so 20
late.
Years ago. Yeah, really late. And I wouldn't have did it. So my parents married 30 years before they got divorced, which is hilarious because it's like saying to someone, I'd rather die alone than to any more of this. But anyway, they got divorced, and I was at a play. My buddy Steve Robbins was in a play at New York Tech University, and I noticed his divorced mom in the audience on a Friday night, and I was like, man, it would be cool if my mom had something to do because she was sad. She just got divorced. So I went to an open mic, and then it just kind of turned into a thing. Mm. Now, I mean, I was so good that I spent the next 10 years driving a yellow cab for 12. Right. That's how good I was.
Driving during the day, hitting clubs at night?
Yes. Yeah. 5A to 5P. And that's how that works. You split the cab in half. Mm-hmm. And the hook is there's less traffic at night, in theory, but during the day, nobody throws up in your cab.
Right.
So I'll sit in a few traffic jams.
You got book deals along the way.
Mm-hmm.
How'd that work out?
Oh, wow.
How did it happen?
This is a great one. This is all taxi related.
Yeah.
So there was a CBS broadcaster by the name of Charles Osgood, who hosts CBS Sunday Morning.
Sure.
And Horton Hears a Who and all that jazz. I picked him up in a cab one day, and he was a Yankee fan. Like, we became fast friends talking about the Yankees. Because I used to just deal whoever got into whatever was happening in my life.
Yeah.
So that's the way that's how this, the Yankees got to trade Sheffield. You think so? And, you know, and then we got into it, and we talked, and he was explained who he was, and said he didn't do anything in comedy, but he would love to support me in any way he could, and that he published. So he had asked me for, a sample chapter. I wrote it. It was great, because he called me up, and he's like, this is fascinating. fascinating stuff. I don't want it anywhere near what I do. It's like, so he started an imprint. It was called Big Top Press. Mm-hmm. And I believe that's the only book that they ever published. Claim the fame. But Osgood has always been like some quiet muscle behind the operation since about 2010.
That's a great story. I had no idea.
Wild, right?
What a random...
Super cool dude.
Super cool dude.
He has season tickets to the Yankees. He only goes on Sundays, but he's a little older. And when you shake his hand, he has arthritis and he yells. It's awkward, but it's also hilarious. If he's like, oh my God, I love you. And he's like, ow! It's really funny to be around.
You think he's doing a bit.
He might be. That would be great.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Do you have a point of sale system you can trust, or is it a real POS? You need Shopify for retail. From accepting payments to managing inventory, Shopify POS has everything you need to sell in person. Go to shopify.com/system, all lowercase, to take your retail business to the next level today. That's shopify.com/system.
So you ended up here at Fox writing for Kennedy.
Yes.
Did you know her before? Did you just apply for a job?
So the jump on that, neither. I was doing a stand-up at Gotham Comedy Club down on 23rd and 7th. Mm-hmm. And her booker at the time, Andrew Heaton, saw me and invited me to come be a panelist on her show the next day. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I semi took him at his word that it was a serious thing. But I was still at that point, not a full-time cabbie, but I was doing seven-day leases, which means you lease the cab, drive it whenever you want, but mm-hmm. you're not working your traditional. Okay.
Right.
So the first time I appeared here, for real, I had a cab double parked on 6th Avenue, trunk up, doors open, hazards on, because that's how you get out of the parking ticket. If it looks like you're hauling something, let you be. So I did hit on her show, and on the way out, it was me, her, I believe, Kaylee McEnany. And I was like, nice to meet you. I got to go. I got to get my cab. And they were like, but there's nobody in it. And I was like, no. I meant, you know, it's my cab. Like, I can give you a ride home. And that's how it started. And then from there, paneling on her show, her writer left, and they invited me to come on and write the show.
Okay.
So it was cool.
And then you just started being, you know, the guy who would drop in on other shows.
Yep.
Dropping little comedy bombs and leaving.
Yep.
And then you ended up with your daily radio show.
Mm-hmm.
And now the Saturday show.
Yeah. So basically that... becomes, I'm writing for Kennedy, I'm doing minimal amount of hits around the channel, and I'm guesting on other radio shows here. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, essentially when an opening presented itself in the lineup, you know, all 37 people they wanted said no. Right. At which point they were like, we're out of people, Jimmy. No, I'm kidding. At which point they gave me that show. And in doing that show, you know, I had to promote it on the channel, and I seem to have found a little bit of traction, which is great. But the thing for me, man, as we sit here getting ready to launch a show with my own name on it, something I wanted to do since fifth grade, is I've always been calibrated to be mindful of how what I'm doing is impacting the people receiving it. Mm-hmm. And I say that because as someone who spent 12 hours a day driving a taxi, you really see how, like, AM talk radio can really, like, warp you, dement you, good or bad, okay? Yeah. But it really has an impact because it's so regimented. And I was so mindful of that when I got the radio show that I've kind of spilled that philosophy into the TV show. And the campaign promise right now is because I'm new and I'm stupid and I want to use it for good. Mm-hmm. So I'm like, this TV show is going to help people. And it's probably the dumbest thing I could be doing right now. But that's where we're headed. That's the cliff we're on.
What was the learning curve like to do the radio show? And another thing is this.
Mm-hmm.
3-hour show a day.
Yep.
Give or take. There's commercials and stuff. You've got to have takes on stuff.
Yep.
Hot takes on stuff that you might, as a civilian, not have really cared about.
Ever.
But you've got to...
Yep.
You've got to...
Uh-huh.
That's the job.
Yep. So there's two philosophies I take to talk radio.
Mm-hmm.
I'm either dissecting the story through how does this affect you, mm-hmm. the guy listening to me, or what is my horse sense on the human function in this story. So to give you an example, Hunter Biden shows up to a hearing yesterday where he's potentially being held in contempt for defying a subpoena, which is a lot trendier than the Republicans are making it sound. Let's let's not act like they're throwing a perfect game on subpoena attendance, but we get it. Okay. So in that moment, I don't actually have any legal acumen, but I likened it to the fact that I know he's not actually going to have to testify if he shows up. So it's a little bit of a posturing move. So I was kind of dissecting that through the lens of this is the classic example of a guy outside a bar.
Right.
who, once the cop shows up, acts like he wants to fight because he knows he won't have to.
Hold me back.
Thank you. That's exactly. So that's what I, that, and that's usually the two lanes through which I'm filtering politics, because I need to make it interesting to me.
Right.
And I don't want to make it wonky, because I think my superpower is that, I say this a lot on the radio, is that I don't have one. I think the fact that I don't talk with such a heightened intellect makes me more relatable.
Sure. Did you care a lot or at all about news? You were a news follower.
I grew up in a big Reagan house. I grew up in Levittown and
Long Island, New York.
Yeah, Strong Island. And everybody in the OG Levittown was some served in the military, because it was, you know, predominantly settled by guys returning home from World War II, buying houses, GI Bill and stuff like that. And everybody in my house post-military was a cop. I'm the only member of my family. It's not a cop. Only male member. I'm talking extended. Cousins, uncles, everything. And I said, like, I would have been a cop if it weren't for this thing called a background check. Right. You know, that whole thing. Hey-o. But the point is, I had a lot of patriotism beat into me as an early age, because Reagan was president. In 86, they were refurbishing the Statue of Liberty, and it was a big deal to get the scaffolding off. And that was like the whole focus of my third grade year, was like America, land of opportunity, melting pot, all the cliches. But like, I bought in. Like, I was surrounded by veterans, so I was into it. And for that reason, I always paid attention to electoral politics. Mm. Big general elections. I didn't really, you know, I knew Cuomo was a governor. I knew who Ed Koch was, but I wasn't following it day to day. I didn't start to follow it till I drove a cab. And the reason being is, driving a taxi is the original social media. And what I mean by that is, someone gets in and shares an opinion with you, mm-hmm. and then you wind up sharing with someone else who shares it with someone else. It's weird.
Yeah.
And you have, like, it's like a human like button. But in a cab, you get a dislike button. Like, people will get in. So it was always fun, but I've kind of got, slowly, there was this gravitational pull that I guess took me to where I am now in terms of intellectual curiosity.
You got a stand-up special on Fox Nation 2. Mm-hmm. What's it called? They're just jokes. That's already out.
Yep.
And you make a joke in there about Fox domesticating you.
Yes.
Because, I mean, you obviously can say things on stage, mm-hmm. or in your personal life that you can't say on the radio. Do you find yourself, when you're, because sometimes when you have a job like this, you're talking while you're still thinking of the next thing to say.
Yeah.
How often do you find yourself going, oh, I'm going down a road I probably shouldn't be going down here on the radio?
This is what's weird. So not as much as you'd think. And this comes from being a comic and testing out material. What happens is really weird. But if you've performed enough, you know if the audience is going to laugh at a new joke 3 words into the sentence, because you can tell how it feels.
Yeah.
And it's the greatest thing in the world when the joke doesn't work, because the rest of the words are like, I'm not going out there. Like, it's too late. We started the sentence. And because of that, that firewall, on the radio, it's weird, but you can gauge where you're going. For me anyway, it's slower in my head than it is in my mouth. So I actually am like probably 4 or 5 sentences ahead, and I don't find myself saying something without it having been vetted. And one of the things I do, though,
you're internally vetting it.
Yes.
While your mouth is 15 seconds ahead.
100%. It's like I'm on delay.
Yeah.
And one of the things I do on radio a lot is I play a lot of my own drops, audio drops. Mm-hmm. And in those moments, that's a chance to recalibrate. So if I do, to the point you said, which is like, oh, Jimmy's really going off on one here. You know, Jimmy can play a sound effect from his kid and be like, oh, hold on now. You do need to support this kid.
Right. 3-hour radio show.
Uh-huh.
How do you, tell people how you manage, it's regimented. You're mm-hmm. on, you're yep. on, then you're off. And there are built-in breaks that are the same all the time.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have sort of a muscle memory of when you're going to eat, when you're going to drink, take care of bodily stuff?
Yep.
The walk from the mm-hmm. bathroom to the studio is 30 seconds, give or take.
Yep.
One way.
Yep. So I'll give you the whole process.
Yeah.
Okay. In terms of doing the show, because my background is stand up and I'm used to them just being like, you know, they say your name and you run onto the stage.
Mm-hmm.
I get into that studio literally every day in the final 20 seconds before we go live. Mm-hmm. And that's intentional, because I want the spontaneity of walking on and here we are and here's what's happening.
Right.
For that reason, I also don't have an outline. I don't prep interviews. What I do is I read a lot in the morning, so I have a sense for what's happening in the news and what my guests might be related to.
Mm-hmm.
And then I kind of instinctively just have a conversation that'll eventually present a segue into the serious topic. In terms of prepping for the show, I get up and write same day every day. I get up at 4 every day, because that's what I did when I was a cab driver. Mm-hmm. And I like to write before my brain has interacted with the world. So So I do my writing in terms of comedy before I actually do my news consumption. And then depending on whether or not I have morning TV, because I have, you know, 3 days a week, I have like Fox and Friends First, stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
I either drive in at 5 a.m. Or I will train in at like 7 a.m. But in that window between either 5 or 7 or whatever it is, that's when I'm consuming news. When I get to my studio for a 9:30 meeting, we have like a, I guess you'd call it like a prep meeting or something. You know what I mean? Yeah. Editorial meeting.
Sure.
We'll talk about like last night's sports, what's in the news cycle, what's on the monitor right now, and kind of lay out what we think is a rundown for the show. From there, I'm back in my office either doing TV hits or, you know, whatever the heck else they got me work. You know, I do everything. I write books, do stand-up, I do radio, I do TV. I wash windows from 42 to 46. And I used to be Geraldo's mustache guy, but he left, so I get a little free time. But the point is, I'll be consuming in that window, and then we go live. In terms of food, this is it. Are you ready?
Yeah.
Okay. So when I was a cab driver, all I did, and this mirrors the process now, all I did in a 12-hour shift is I would have two bananas and two granola bars mm-hmm. strategically placed in the day 3 hours apart.
Okay.
So I'd start at 5 a.m. in a cab. At 8 a.m., I got a banana. And like it was like a seal, like you trained it. At 11 a.m., I got a granola bar. Then at 2 p.m., I got a banana. Then at 5, when I was heading back to the garage, I got a granola bar. And that's how, you know, reverse. And that's how it worked. I do the same thing here. So I wake up, but it starts in the morning. I have a, when I get to Fox, I have an ice water, and I have like a premier protein shake, like 160 calories. Then I'll start to write. I'll drink an iced coffee. Then I have cashews. This every day, though. This is psychotic, okay? This is a prison that I live in. Then every day at about 9 a.m., I'll have a bag of a small 200-calorie bag of cashews. Then at about 11, I have Greek yogurt. And then at 11, plain Greek yogurt. Okay. Nothing in it. And then at 11:30, I cry. I cry for like 20 minutes,
okay.
And then I go on the radio hungry. Because the thing for me is I find this as a stand-up, and it works very well for TV and radio. I'm better. I'm more assertive if I'm hungry.
Okay.
Because too much of my my happiness is calibrated around food. So if I'm full, I feel like I don't fight as hard. And that's why I do that. Post-show, though, same routine. Cashews, yogurt, and then at some point, if I have like primetime TV hits, I'll eat here. If I don't, I'll eat at home, but it's just a lean protein.
You know this is a prison of your own making, Jim.
Oh, absolutely. No, I'm aware.
But it's also probably comforting.
Yes.
For all the other chaos in the world,
yes.
That's taken care of.
Yes, that's what it is. And it's mindless, and it gives you, and that there's security in that regimen because you always wind up feeling like yourself, no matter how many things don't feel like yourself. Like today, I just pulled around the corner on 49th Street to park my Bronco, and the first thing I see is my face on the biggest billboard in Times Square. It's freaky, man. It's cool,
yeah.
But you want to know the truth the minute you see it? The minute you see it, you go, if you're me, because you're really thinking about the product, you're like, well, there went the money for the studio audience. I guess we blew the audience money.
I appreciate the promotion, but could that money have been spent more efficiently than these people in Times Square that probably aren't Fox fans to begin with?
We're converting them. You'll see, Chris. You'll see.
You got a book coming out later this month, Cancel Culture Dictionary. Chapters in there about canceling entertainers and being able to keep enjoying the art and, you know,
separate the art from the artist.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Bill Cosby, Michael Jackson, Louis C.K. If Billie Jean comes on the radio, I'm going to say, wow, this is a banger, but it seeps in. You know what I mean?
Nuts.
And it's the same thing with Louis now. It's the same thing if the Cosby Show comes on, where those people's artistic legacy.
Mm-hmm. It's tainted.
It is tainted.
Yep. I think it depends on the person. And what I don't mean the artist, I mean you yourself. Because music to a lot of people means a lot of different things. But for me, a lot of those songs are nostalgia songs. So I don't hear Michael Jackson and think of him, groping kids. I just think of being a kid.
Yeah.
You know, I think of like when they made the Thriller video, I actually consumed it like it was a horror film. And I remember they made the making of, and it was a real thing. I mean, looking back on Thriller, I think the most shocking detail was the fact that he had a girlfriend. I don't think it was the werewolf. I mean, we could buy a werewolf, right. And I'm like, Michael's dating a girl. So for me, that's where it goes. Now, for like somebody like R. Kelly, who I didn't listen to until, not really listen to him a lot, but I didn't hear him until my adult life, his music brings me closer to the crime.
Got
because
it.
I consumed it in closer proximity. Cosby, and this one breaks my heart. I consider the success of the Cosby Show around like 85, 86, like peak America. Because I feel like we were as integrated as we had ever been up until that point in our life. Mm-hmm. The Bears had taken the NFL into pop culture with the Super Bowl shuffle. Eddie Murphy was a big star. MTV was exploding. And it was like a feel-good time.
Yeah.
And I hate to know that like the face of that party, you know, was what it was. But I think, you know, for a lot of people, there's that duality. I don't watch a lot of Cosby, so I don't miss it, but I'll always, like, I'm going to bump into my TV show on Michael Jackson songs. It's just reality.
Yeah.
And maybe I'm, again, out of touch because I wasn't cute enough for these guys. Maybe if I was a little cuter as a kid, it would be more traumatic.
A couple quick hitters before mm-hmm. we get out of here.
Yep.
Speaking of Cosby.
Yep.
Favorite stand-up comedy albums as a kid?
Oh, man. All right, I'll give them to you, okay?
Yeah.
I want Eddie Murphy, Delirious, is probably my favorite. And because he was the first comedian I consumed that cursed. And as a little kid, when you're around cursing, it means more than it should. And you're like, whoa! And I didn't realize that most comics in the 80s were ripping off Pryor because I saw them before I saw Pryor.
Yeah.
So when I started doing stand-up, everyone was just stealing Pryor's act. I didn't watch Richard Pryor on Sunset Strip till I was probably 3 years into stand-up. And I was like, God, this isn't very original. And I was like, oh, yeah!
Oh, wait, actually it was.
It's actually 20 years before everyone else. He was amazing.
Right. Are you related to Gambino crime family captain James Fela?
No, but here's the best story. Thank you for asking this, okay?
Okay.
So the first time I went out on a date with a credit card, I had one of those credit cards where it's not even a credit card. You have to send $250 to a bank in Dakota.
Yep.
It's the craziest thing in the world. I'm just giving you my money so I can prove I'll spend my money. So I went to Nino's on First Avenue with Dana Douglas. She was a tanning salon employee at the time. Long Island, it's by law you have to get spray tan once a day. So Dana Douglas and I went to Nino's on First Avenue. I went to pay with my new credit card. It was a Citibank card. I was all excited. Citibank MasterCard. And I give it to the guy on the plate. Another guy comes back over and he goes, your money's no good here. He's like, say hello to your father. And I was like, my father's a cop. I'm like, it could, but I didn't know why it was no good there.
Okay.
Until I got home that night. My brother Joey, who was a city cop, who still lived with us, he was in the academy. I was like, dude, I was an Italian place. They wouldn't take my money because of my last name. And he's like, oh, there's a mobster.
You said they were really good to Italian.
I know. I was like, oh, this is amazing. But the girl, Dana, was so blown away. She's like, who is this guy? He's hooked up in the city. It was crazy.
Did you have GPS when you drove?
No.
Okay.
Because
there was a time. Was it part of the? Like, you had to really know the streets.
It was like being a cab driver in London to this day. There was a nobility in knowing where you're going. So there's two things that make it really hard for me to drive as a passenger in a taxi. One is I am eternally frustrated by their driving skill because of what you just described. I get in on 6th Avenue and 36th Street, and I'm going up to Fox News on 47th. He types it into his GPS. I'm like, dude, the streets are numbered up. We're not turning.
Yeah.
It's a straightaway.
If you hit the lights, it's a one-minute shot.
Yeah, maybe 1 minute. And so I'm losing my mind while this is going on. But at the same time, I don't want to be mean because I know that's what they're conditioned to. Yeah. Back to me being stuck in a process that's my own hell in prison. But the other problem with me getting driven anywhere, that's why I drive in every day early, is because I do have like a survivor's guilt because I did the job for a long time and I am tipping cab drivers to the point that they think I'm romantically interested. And it's, you know, it's getting crazy now.
All right. To that end, mm-hmm. you've picked me up at Nathan's in Coney Island.
Oh,
get me to work.
Okay. Well, how would I do it? Based on where you're going, you're far enough along on the belt. You might just go under the Verrazano, you know what I mean? And head up the BQE and get into the Hugh Carey Tunnel. And then you'd probably go West Side Highway. You don't want to cut through Times Square if you can avoid doing it, but 6th Avenue is the devil. So I'd probably West Side Highway to 48th and just take my chances, if only because a crosstown on the west side is not bad at all, but 6th Avenue on, you know, to the east is an albatross, so you just got to roll the dice and hope 48th Street cooperates.
You can still do that job today if you want.
Oh, you have. Listen, man. I always stay in tune with my taxi skills because you never know when you're going to make that wrong turn on the air.
You talk about your family. Is your kid named after Abraham Lincoln?
Oh, yes, he is.
Yeah?
Yeah, that's...
His name is Lincoln, not Abraham, by the way.
His name's Abraham. Yes, and the way that went down is I loved the name Lincoln.
Mm-hmm.
But when you try to pick out a baby name, I didn't know this. We only have one kid. is you're not supposed to share it with other adults because they base their opinion on adults they know with the same name. Mm-hmm. You know, so don't name it that. I dated a guy named Stu who was a real gem. I'm like, oh, whatever. My kid didn't date you. But anyway, stick with me. I had to get that name approved, okay, because my wife had her idea for names. The hook is you give them your opening offer in the negotiation is a bad name, but you're passionate about it.
Yep.
So I fought my wife to the death over naming him Boris. Boris. And my wife's parents live in Ohio, 600-mile drive. So I once fought her to Ohio and back over Boris to the point that the tears in the car were naming this kid Boris. Okay. At the GW Bridge, coming across the bridge onto 95, I offered up, and it is a brilliant stroke, and he should thank me to this day. I offered up Lincoln as the compromise. She's like, I love that name.
Awesome.
Boom.
Nice job.
You're welcome, kid.
Well played. I have, my kids are still little.
Oh, good.
You give me a good joke for them.
Oh, for your little kids?
Yeah, seven.
Oh, wow. Let me give you a quick one. Well, they're seven.
Yeah.
All right, I won't tell them the Flasher joke. Let me think about this. Like, street joke for your kids. I mean, this is unfair to your kids, but the first street joke my grandmother ever told me, I was 5 years old, but I was, like, societal literate. It was, did you hear about the Flasher who was thinking about retiring? No, Grandma. He decided to stick it out for another year. Good night, everybody. Yeah. Maybe don't tell him that.
Did you get that joke?
Oh, absolutely.
See,
yeah.
My first, I mean, my dad, when I was probably about that age, asked me, do you want to hear a dirty joke?
Mm-hmm.
I said, sure. He says, six white horses fell in the mud. That's the joke, but I didn't get it. I'm like, yeah, they're dirty.
Oh, that's, I heard a version of that back in the day where it was like, you want to hear a clean joke, Bob took a bath. You want to hear a dirty joke? Bob took a bath with Bubbles. What's the dirty joke? Bubbles was the girl next door. Yeah. Yeah, I remember those. That's funny.
All right, Jimmy Failla, host of Fox Across America on your radios, Fox News Saturday night on the Fox News Channel coming up this weekend. Congratulations.
Thanks,
and also the new book coming out later this month, The Cancel Culture Dictionary. Jimmy, good to talk to you, man.
Good stuff, Chris. We'll always have this.
Thanks, dude.
Boom. That was great, man. Thank you.
You've been listening to the Fox News Rundown. And now, stay up to date by subscribing to this podcast at foxnewspodcasts.com. Listen ad-free on Fox News Podcasts Plus on Apple Podcasts. And Prime members can listen to the show ad-free on Amazon Music. And for up-to-the-minute news, go to foxnews.com.
Hi, everybody. It's Brian Kilmeade. I want you to join me weekdays at 9 a.m. East as we break down the biggest stories of the day with some of the biggest newsmakers and, of course, what you think.
Listen live or get the podcast now at BrianKilmeadeShow.com.
Jason in the House, the Jason Chaffetz Podcast. Dive deeper than the headlines and the party lines as I take on American life, politics, and entertainment. Subscribe now on foxnewspodcast.com or wherever you download podcasts.